The Man with the Plastic Skull, copyright 2001 by Fender Tucker. Chapter 1, A Disturbing Telegram. Philo Funtaff Holster leaned back in the specially designed car seat of his brand new 1960 Metropolitan convertible and once more regarded the telegram that had just arrived from Mora Bora, informing him that, like it or not, he was not the only man on the planet with a plastic skull. He was on his way to spend an hour or so with the most beautiful woman in the world, bar none, and now, as he pulled out of his driveway into the slow-moving 5 p.m. traffic, he began to read the message from the far-off Pacific that threatened to strip him of his fame, his fortune, and more importantly, the most beautiful woman in the world. Nuff said. Mora Bora, 5:13 a.m., July 5th, 1960. From Dwill Sprocket to Philo Funtaff Holster. Fi, old friend, I've got bad news. A native of Mora Bora, one Manuel Amano, is going to reveal tomorrow at high noon that he too has a plastic skull like yours. Philo swerved around an 18-wheeler that was making a wide right turn, then drove on. Back to the telegram. Now, as you know, you've made quite a name for yourself in past years as the man with the plastic skull, exhibiting yourself in traveling motorcade circuses, allowing people to feel and manipulate your non-rigid skull. A car in the right lane cut Philo off, and he had to slam on the brakes, sending the car into a tight, well-controlled spin. Straightening out, Philo once again turned to the telegram and drove on. I've managed to find out that the operation on Amano was performed by a Dr. Wesley Toothwell, who practices at Pepper Duke University just down the road from where you live in northeast Chicago. He's a, what do you call it, bone surgeon. Philo pulled into a service station and told the attendant to fill her up. The attendant gave a toothy grin and chuckled.
Gosh, Mr. Funtaff Holster, anytime.
How did you know my name? Philo shot back, but immediately realized his mistake. He was one of the most well-known and beloved circus performers in the tri-state area.
Well, Mr. Funtaff Holster, it's writ right there on the side of your car.
That's right, Philo thought. I forgot that I had a sign painter come over and paint. Philo Funtaff Holster, the man with the plastic skull, a circus near you, on both sides of my car. He paid for the gas, got back in the convertible, and picked up the telegram as he started the car and drove on. There's more to tell you, but these telegrams are, well, expensive. I'll write you a letter and send it to you via the U.S. mail. A police car pulled up alongside the Metropolitan, which was going about 50, and the policeman who was not driving held his billy club up and through the closed window thumped it against his gloved left hand once, twice, three times, all the while gazing at Philo with a sleepy grin on his face. Philo winced and felt the skin on his hump loosen. He knew what those three thumps meant, the third degree. Then he saw the cop's eyes drift down to the sign on the side of the car, and the cop's face went ashen. He yelled at his partner to speed up, and to Philo's astonishment, the police car sped on ahead and was soon out of sight. Philo breathed a sigh of relief and resumed his telegram reading. Once again, he drove on. I guess that's about it, partner. Dwill. Philo put down the telegram and thought about the implications of another person having a plastic skull like his. And how? Philo had always been told that it was old Doc Winkerdahl that had saved his life by removing his heavily radar-active skull back in 1954, replacing it with a skull prosthesis made from plastine, a new form of plastic the doctor had invented, a form that was actually more like a soft rubber with an incredible tensile strength. It wasn't the whole skull, but just the bowl-shaped top part, from the tops of the eye orbitals up. But old Doc Winkerdahl was killed not long after performing the operation, and never revealed the secret formula for plastine. He left a note saying it was hidden in a 2-inch plastine sphere, but the 4 government agents who killed Winkerdahl searched every inch of his office and home and never found it. At this point in his ruminations, Philo pulled into the posh driveway of the Smith Smythes, where dwelt the most beautiful woman in the world, Confessa Smith Smythe. Chapter 2, Confessa Worries. Confessa met him at the door as she always did, giving him a warm kiss while rubbing his hump for luck. But she had a look of worry on her pretty face.
Oh, fie,
she bewailed.
I have just had the most dreadful news.
Me too. You first, Philo countered.
Well, you know that Daddy has had some bad luck in the market lately, and he just found out that unless he scores real big with Plastine Incorporated, the company that you and he started in anticipation of the day when the formula was found, he's dead broke. And you know we can't get married until he can afford to pay for the lavish wedding ceremony.
Gosh, Confessa, that is bad news. My news isn't quite so bad, but it's sort of in the same category. I just found out that there is another person who now has a plastic skull, and that may put a damper on my circus career. As the only man in the world with a plastic skull, I was quite a draw. But with this Amano guy...
Oh, Fie, what are we going to do? You've always been so resourceful. In fact, it was because of your hump that Daddy was happy for us to become, well, an item. He always said, if a man can grow up with a handicap like a huge hump on his right shoulder blade and still not be bitter with the world, that man is good enough for my daughter. Of course, I've come to love you in spite of your hump, although it does get in the way of our lovemaking sometimes, and I do wish it could be removed, but that's not to mention your brave experience with your radar-active skull.
Well, Confessa, I feel the same way about your father. As for my skull, you remember how I discovered back in 1954, quite by accident one day when I wandered too near an Army Air Force installation, that my original osseous skull was hypersensitive to those newfangled radar waves used by the military since World War II. I got an excruciating headache that knocked me out, and it was only through the good luck of being found by old Doc Winkerdahl that I survived. Apparently, the radar waves caused my skull to contract, giving me one horrible headache. So he removed the top of my skull and replaced it with a plastine facsimile. I was in a coma for a month afterwards, but came out of it in good condition.
Oh, Fie, if only he had told you what he did with your old skull, we might be able to help Daddy. I've heard that the military and the police are very interested in any material that can detect radar waves. Of course, it's obvious why the Air Force wants it, but why would the cops want it? I know what you mean, Confessa. It's a real mystery.
He pulled her close to him for another kiss, then snapped his fingers.
Hold it. I just had an idea. Can I use your phone?
He reached for the telephone and dialed 0.
Operator, connect me with Professor Wesley Toothwell at Pepper Duke University. A few minutes later, a voice answered.
Toothwell here.
Dr. Toothwell, my name is Philo Vundhavholster. Did you just perform surgery on a Mora Bora native, giving him a plastic skull?
Why, yes, I did. Did you say Vundhavholster?
Yes, I did. I'm the original man with the plastic skull. Did you use plastine for your skull?
Well, no, I didn't, Mr. Vundhav.
Just call me Philo, please.
Thank you, Philo. No, I didn't use plastine. As you know, the formula is still unknown, and the plastine in your head is the only bit of it known to be in existence.
That's right, Doctor. May I ask 2 questions? One, is the man you operated on planning on traveling around exhibiting his skull in circuses? And 2, was the operation difficult? I mean, would it have been easier if you had some plastine to work with?
Well, Mr. Philo, the answer to your first question is absolutely not. Mr. Amano has an abject fear of circuses, especially clowns, and wouldn't get near a circus. In fact, he leaves his village in Mora Bora whenever a circus comes to town and lives on another island until the carnies leave town for good. And as for that second question, the answer is yes, 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 and double yes, yes. The qualities of plastine, as exhibited by the hundreds, if not thousands, of circus goers who have seen and manipulated your plastine skull, show that it is a much better material for skull fabrication than the hard bakelite I used. The formula for plastine, when it is finally found, will make That's what I wanted to hear, Doctor. I think you'll be hearing from me again, sooner than you think. Thanks for everything.
With that, Philo hung up the phone and turned to his confessor.
Darling,
I think I've got the answer to all of our problems. Chapter 3, All Strings Tied Up. Bong Hai, leader of the Tong, the fat black lemurs, leaned back in his papasan chair and tamped down another bowl full of his Tong's best brand of opium. He lit the pipe and took a long, slow pull, gazing at the wall as if it were 10 miles away. He set the pipe down and settled deeper in the chair, then reached up and rubbed his skull vigorously with both hands. He pushed with both hands, squeezing the sides of his head till they receded about an inch. Then he pushed the top down, squeezing the sides out. He had a plastic skull. The sensations Bong Hai felt as the inner side of his plastine skull rubbed against his brain, even moving it a bit, were exquisite. He simply could not describe the pleasures to anyone who did not have some good opium and a plastine skull. He thought about how he got his new skull. His photographic memory had it all down in detail, and the opium was making it seem especially real. His lips mumbled soft words as he drifted into the warm, rolling clouds of Nepenthe.
"It began with that Millican fella, Muntav Hosta. He very smart. He have first plastic skull. He got skull in 54 because he find his skull contract get smaller when he get near radar."
Bong Hai chuckled to himself at his pitiful attempt to say near radar and drove on.
"But he luckily found a bone surgeon doctor, fella named Winkeldahl, who removed skull and replaced it with plastine. Doctor also hid formula for plastine at around same time. Formula not found until day 6 years later, when Wundhaf Hostel get blight idea where it might be. He killed two birds with one lock. He find formula for plastine and find his old skull, which contract when near Ladol, all in same place."
The wizened old Tong leader smiled to himself as he continued to manipulate his plastine skull with much pleasure. His softly spoken ruminations continued.
"He get bone doctor named Tootwell to operate on his hump, and he find that original doctor named Winkeldahl, after removing skull and replacing it with plastine skull, also remove hump and replace it with original skull. Then he hide formula ball inside skull hump. Why? Because he know government agents want to kill him for both secrets and will search offices from A to Izzled."
He took another pull on the opium pipe and continued to manipulate his plastine skull, which he got at the Chicago Center for Frivolous Elective Surgery, or Sisyphus. Once the formula was released by Plastine Incorporated to much public hoopla and unheard-of investments by the stock market class, Bong Hai, thanks to his huge fortune amassed from opium sales, was one of the first to receive a new skull.
"So much pleasure I get. Make me glad Wundhaf Hostel get rich from Plastine, get rid of hump and Nelly sweetheart, and sell important Ladol-sensitive skull to military so they can tell if Ladol being used against them."
Bong Hai's eyes glazed over with extreme joy as he mumbled one last question.
"Never did figure out why cops wanted Ladol-sensitive material. Cops never used Ladol against own citizens, would they? After all, 'tis Melica, land of flea, light?"
The end.